It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
TGIF crew, this is Chris Dover, and welcome to the show. This week, we're going to talk to Russell with Primo Targets about the wonderful world of AR-500 steel targets. But first, let me tell you about Sportsman's Guide. Sportsman's Guide is the go-to source for all your outdoor needs, whether it's hunting, fishing, camping. They pretty much got you covered. While you're there, don't forget the Buyer's Club membership, which will save you even more on the products that you need for your outdoor adventure. We got Russell on the line from Primo Targets. How are you, Russell?
Doing pretty good. A little worn out, but I'm all right.
There you. It's good to hear from you again since Tulsa. Sounds like you've been really busy lately. A lot of steel going out for Christmas, I guess.
Yeah, there's been a lot of orders. It's been great, overwhelming. It's awesome. I've been busy but enjoying it.
Right. Now, is this a full-time gig for you?
Yeah, it's full-time. You know, I started as an aircraft mechanic many years ago and did that for 17-plus years and was doing steel targets on the side for a little while. And then, you know, airlines, they like to lay people off. They shut us down here in Shreveport, so I went full-time with my side gig.
That's interesting. Like major airline equipment or, you know, smaller planes? What did you work on back then?
I worked on all the feeder jets for United, American, and Delta. I worked for Express Jet Airlines. It was we did the 50-seaters, the 70-seater jets, you know, now they're puddle jumpers.
Right.
You know. So yeah. It's the feeder lines for all the majors. I was an aircraft mechanic.
Okay, I got you. Cool. That's still bigger than what I picture when somebody says that they're an airplane mechanic or something. I picture a little single engine, you know, prop planes or something like that. So that's
I've done some of that stuff. Worked at FBO and stuff. For the most part, though, I worked on the airline jets.
Right, and did you? What got you into playing around with steel? Was that just something you enjoyed and you kind of made your own targets, or how did you kind of get into wanting to make those?
It's funny because it was YouTube. You know, in the airline industry, as a line mechanic, you have a lot of downtime. You're sitting there waiting for a plane to break or whatever. And so we would sit there and watch YouTube and you know, saw the Iraqi veterans and the Hickoks, and I was like, man, that looks like fun. And we had property, and so I made a set of targets for myself, and then a friend wanted a set, and then it just dominoed from there, you know. And I figured that, you know, I started selling some on Craigslist, and then, you know, I was getting, you know, there was a lot of people interested, so I was like, I'm going to turn this into a little business. And one thing led to another, and here we are today. This has been one heck of a ride, and I'm enjoying it.
Right, I understand that. Now, with
yeah.
I'm sure over the years, probably a lot of trial and error, a lot of lessons learned.
That sort of thing.
Sure. When you first started, what type of equipment were you using? Was that different than what you have now?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I started with the oxygen acetylene torch and mild steel, and was just cutting out little gongs and, you know, hanging them. You know what anybody that got a few trade skills can do, and realize that after more and more research that wasn't safe. And you know, and then I found, you know, research the AR-500, AR-550, and T1, and all the different types of metals out there, and found the most economical and the safest was AR-500, and that's turned it into what it is today.
Right. Now, with mild steel, is there any applications that as far as shooting sports or, you know, firearms, are concerned, are there any applications that you can use that for? I mean, could you use that for rimfire stuff? Or I'm assuming you probably could for, like, air rifle stuff if it was thin enough, right?
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of steel challenge use, rimfire challenge and stuff, they use mild steel because you start buying 10, 12 stages worth of steel, the smaller guys, they can't afford all that stuff. And it's perfectly fine to use mild steel for rimfire. It's borderline with you know, your 9 mils and 45s. It's not going to last long at all. And once it starts divoting, you can't control the ricochets, and then it becomes dangerous. And so you need to swap it out with some fresh steel or move up to the AR-500 or 550.
Right, and I guess with the mild, I mean, even with the 22, I mean, repeated shots in the same place over time, right, is probably what's going to cause the issue.
Yeah, you know, steel is steel. When you pound on it, you're going to change the metallurgy of it, and it's going to eventually weaken over time. And, you know, they don't last forever, but we try to do what we can to make them last as long as they can and get your money's worth.
Right. Now, I have a basic understanding when it comes to the AR rating. And, you know, the higher that number is, basically the denser. Is that a correct assumption, the denser the metal is?
It's the hardness. Okay, all it is the hardness.
Gotcha.
AR-500 stands for abrasive resistance, and it's 500 Brinell, which is the hardness. Okay. And a lot of people don't know about the Brinell hardness, so you can compare it to the Rockwell hardness, which is about 52, 53. Rockwell on the C scale, if you know what that means.
Right.
It's the hardness of the metal. And AR is not mild steel. It has a higher carbon content, so that it can, when you harden it does its job.
Right. And I'm guessing that when you're working with that, I'm guessing there's some special equipment and even some care that needs to be taken, possibly?
Yeah, you don't want to overheat it. And there's all kinds of controversy about steel targets and what's the right way to cut them and, you know, the best way. The best way to do it would be laser cut. But not everybody can afford a $200,000, $300,000 laser cutter that can cut 1-inch steel. And so the other alternatives is water jet, which is a little more economical, and then plasma. Plasma's good as long as you submerge your metal in water and you do the machine runs at the right speeds so that you have the smallest amount of edge deformation as possible. And with plasma, it's just you have to be more careful, but it's completely safe, and tons of companies use it, and that's the way we do it. We use CNC plasma machines, water submerge the metal, and it never gets over 100 degrees, so the temper never changes and the hardness doesn't change.
Oh, okay, very interesting. And how accurate of a cut, you know, can you get with that? How precise of a cut can you get with something like a plasma cutter?
Well, the CNC does all the work, and it knows it's very accurate within a tenth, I guess, 10 thousandths of an inch.
Okay.
You can get it accurate.
I guess what I was getting at with that is, I mean, if you've got a 4x8 or however big, you know, sheet of metal that you're working with, I mean, I'm assuming you want as the least amount of waste as possible as you're cutting those targets out. So, you know, being able to lay those out in a pattern, you've probably got some edges that are close together in that scenario, right?
Right. And that's, you can cut, you know, no matter how close the cut is, the way the machine runs, that the only part that's heated is the cut line. So it doesn't matter if you're right next to another target or you nest them out in these programs, mm-hmm. and to get the least amount of waste as possible so you can make money at this. Otherwise, nobody would be able to afford your targets. Right. So, but you can get as close. I mean, you're talking. All of our gaps are 0.20 of an inch between wow. each target.
Wow.
Yeah. There's so not much waste.
A little less than a quarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. That answers my question, I guess, about how precise it can be. It's pretty doggone precise. Not a lot of waste for sure, unless you got some oddball shaped stuff.
Well, the problem is we cut a lot of round targets, and a circle is not. You know, you can't butt a bunch of circles up together. You're going to end up with these little stars everywhere. So you do have some waste built into this, but you know, it's just trying to minimize that as much as possible.
Right, and I'm guessing you can, if you lay it out in such a way, you could probably put smaller circles in between. Like if you had four larger circles, you could potentially get
right.
one smaller in between those four, right? Kind of down in the
right, bottom. Yeah, we make different stuff with our parts of the patterns that, you know, they end up becoming washers or brackets or,
gotcha.
Or something else. So, you know, there's hardly any waste, you know.
Yeah.
We scrap metal maybe once every four or five months.
Wow.
You know, to the scrapyard.
That's not.
And we do. I mean, quite a bit of targets.
Right. Yeah. That's not very often for what it seems that you guys do. Now you were talking. You said something about a T1 metal or something earlier. What is that? I've never heard of that.
It's just another type of high carbon steel, and they use it in. It's not economical. People, they ask you that all the time because there's a lot. So you're at a gun show or some kind of a show somewhere, and they always, you know, people strike up conversations and ask you, well, I have this kind of steel. I have this kind of steel. Will this work? And a lot of industries use T1, and, you know, for, like, say they make bulldozers and buckets and implements, and it's just a hard steel in it. And it's just like AR-500. It's just different type of hardness and tempering process. It's a more expensive metal.
Right. Yeah. More. Yeah. That pretty much. Yeah. That would kind of nail it down. Definitely answer that. Now you talked about making some other parts. And that would come in handy because, I mean, you guys do. You make all kinds of things from nowadays, from plate racks to poppers to. Pretty much you name it. When did you start getting into that? Is that something you kind of got into right off the bat? You said you were making gongs, or is that something you kind of graduated into, kind of getting the feel on the design and how to lay all of that stuff out?
Most of my staple targets that are on my website came from somebody asking me if I could do it. And I just figured out a way to duplicate it and make it economical and to sell it over and over. And I started off not knowing much about, you know, I'm relatively new to the whole gun industry. You know, I've only been, you know, into this type of industry about 5 years. And, you know, it's just most of the targets was just, as I see something on YouTube and I'd put my spin on it and make it my way. And that's how the different apparatuses came about. And
I guess that there's a lot of, when you start playing with that, I know I've delved into some reactive stuff before. I mean, mainly with mild steel and using rimfire, just using 22 for that. And I know that there's a lot of, for me, there was a lot of trial and error on that. So go through quite a bit of taking it apart, putting it back together, trying again when you were working on those reactive designs?
Yeah. All my friends have all my mistakes, you know. They've all inherited all the stuff that didn't work out, or I had to redesign, or... You know, and then we have some stuff on the range that's just, it's just out there now. But yeah, there's a lot of learning to, you know, when you're shooting at something, that's pretty destructive in itself. And then repeatability, you want, you know, this stuff's expensive to people, you know, to anybody. It, you know, a plate rack is $700 to $1,500. What you're gonna, you want to build something that they're gonna get their money out of. And you, when I started my first, you know, reactive style targets, they just weren't robust enough, and I didn't know better. But you know, you, as you start more and more rounds through stuff, you realize, well, you need to beef this up, beef that up, or change this. And it's an evolving deal. It's fun and challenging, and it's never dull. You know, there's always, there's so many ways to make a target. You know, you can see it on the internet. Everybody's got their own ideas and all these reactive stuff, and everybody wants the coolest thing, and it's fun.
Right.
But yeah, there's a lot of mistakes.
Now, what is the one that kind of kicked your butt the most as far as design? Is there one that sticks out that kind of gave you the most problems before you got it right?
My plate rack, it started as a six knockdown targets on top of a gong stand. And then customers like, can you make those resettable? And I was like, sure I can. And, you know, there's a lot of geometry involved. You know, all my stuff is portable. It can be broken down and taken out or put away or leave it up. It's, you know, but I tried to make all my stuff so that the weekend shooter can bring it out there with them, or if, you know, so to design something that's, you know, the reset and all that stuff to make it to where it can break down and work every time you put it together, that was pretty challenging.
Gotcha.
But yeah, the plate rack was the most, the geometry involved in getting that reset right. My first four or five plate racks, I had to, you know, go back to the drawing board on.
Right. Now you mentioned earlier you were talking about some 1-inch steel, so you know that brings in the question: what's the most common thickness that seems to be used, and how does the thickness come into play, in your opinion, when you're dealing with calibers and stuff like that?
So the most common thickness is 3/8. 3/8 is the most rounded thickness for rimfire. Center fire pistol, it's good for all pistol calibers, and rifle rounds under 3,000 feet a second. So that takes care of a lot of rifles. And you know, it's the thicknesses, so the thickness matters on what you're shooting. So we sell 1/4 inch, 3/8, 1/2 inch, and then if you need 50 BMG stuff, we do 5/8, 3/4, and 1 inch, depending on your, what you're going to be shooting distance at. Mm-hmm. But so 1/4 inch is good up to 45 ACP at 10 yards. 3/8 is good for all pistol calibers, 10 yards, rifles under 3,000 feet a second at 100 yards. 1/2 inch is good for rifles over 3,000 feet a second at 100 yards. And if you want to shoot closer than 100 yards, under 3,000 feet a second, if all this makes sense.
Right.
I know it's
yeah.
a lot of
no, totally.
Feet per second.
Totally makes
but
sense.
But yeah, so, you know, some people that like to run and gun and do CQB with their ARs and stuff, they'll get the 1/2 inch. And then, but the majority of people buy 3/8, and it's, and so 5/8 would be good for 50 BMG at 100 yards.
Really?
And yeah.
Wow.
The problem with 50 is, you know, is all 50 BMG, most 50 BMG, I haven't found a round yet that doesn't have a steel core in it, but 50 BMG has steel core that, you know, to keep that bullet together. And I don't recommend shooting steel with a 50 closer than 200 or 300 yards.
Right.
You know, it's just, when you get a gun like that, you want to see how far you can reach out and touch something, you know, that's what it's built for.
Yeah,
But you know, you do get people that want to, you know, shoot it closer, and then you just have to get the. I really recommend 3/4 for 100 yards, but 5/8 will be good enough. But
wow.
Yeah.
How much does something, just out of curiosity, an AR-500 and 3/4? Give us an idea of what a target weighs, a 8 or 10 inch or something target.
Let's just a 3/4 inch. Let's say a 12-inch gong weighs about 25 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. it's a lot of steel. That's, I made a, yeah. There was a gun range in South Louisiana. They wanted all 3/4 inch steel, and we made some 2-foot by 2-foot. Gongs, oh. Down 3/4, and it took 3 of us to hang it.
Holy goodness, that's crazy.
Yeah, they don't have to worry about replacing that for a while.
Right. Now, with, you know, you're talking about the 50 BMG, you know, one of the things I've seen come out lately, and I haven't delved into it since our reload, I probably need to really look into it, because it never crossed my mind, is the subsonic 50 BMG.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that, and I thought, you know, that's a pretty cool concept for those that want to get some trigger time in, right, with their big rifle and just have some fun.
Yeah, the steel target guys love subsonic, because anything slow, speed is what kills steel. Doesn't matter how big the projectile is, it's how fast it's going. And so subsonic, of course, you're good, you know, all over the ranges, you know, of different calibers, you know, because the speed is not where it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we also, for indoor shooting, if you're, we have a range here in Shreveport that we sponsor a Tuesday night match. They use frangible for right. Indoor shooting.
Yeah.
And that's just to keep it safe. You know, but it's totally fine to use lead, but they, you know, it's just safer with frangible.
Yeah, the frangible stuff. Well, sure. Now with, you know, we're talking about distances. What's your recommendation on safe? I mean, I know that's kind of a loaded question, no pun intended. I know, you know, I feel uncomfortable, and I have laid down tarps and stuff and checked for splatter and other things, and I know it has a lot to do with the way your targets are hung. That's a really big issue. Angles make a lot of difference too, whether it's hung on a single hook or it's a double hook design, or chain, you know, if you're talking about a chain, two chains as opposed to a strap, you know, that sort of thing. But for pistol, 10 yards is about as close as I can bring myself to get, and 50 is about as close as I can bring myself to get with anything rifle. And I'm talking, you know, I'm talking lighter loaded, you know, stuff around the maybe 1800 to 2200 feet a second range. So does that sound about right, or what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, the most important thing is how your target is hung. If that thing is free moving, free swinging, you really don't have to worry about bullets coming back. You still have your bullets going left and right and up and down, but they don't have anything coming back at you. And if you can't suspend your target from chains or straps or something, then it needs to have like a 30-degree angle so that it deflects everything down. And yeah, it can be intimidating shooting, you know, closer than 10 yards with your pistols, but we don't recommend it, but we've tried everything at 3 yards just to make sure, you know, we do like what Iraqi does, we gear up and we make sure every target we come out with is safe at 3 yards, and then we recommend at 10 yards to shoot it.
Right.
It can be in rifles. You do want 100 yards is the best thing for a rifle, you just got to make sure that your plates are hung properly.
Right. Now, do you prefer like a single hook, a single strap type design, or the double? You know, when you're talking about a round, like a double on each side, is there one you prefer over the other?
I prefer, when I'm shooting rifles, I prefer the gong style or a torso IPSC setup with a single point stand. And in our stands, you know, they rock. So there's nothing mounted rigid. But for the gongs, I prefer the two chain method or two fire hoses, you know, holding it. Fire hose does really well because it keeps it straight and a la twist. You know, you get a little twist with chain.
And yeah. Do you sell the straps and everything made from the fire hose?
Yes, we do. Okay. We have fire hose hangers or chain hangers.
And I guess that's recycled fire hose, I'm guessing.
Yeah, all that stuff has a lifespan on it. So we get the expired stuff that can't hold water anymore, but it can hold a target.
Right. Right. The reason I'm asking is, coming from a voluntary fire department background, I know how expensive a new hose is, and I'm thinking,
yeah,
well, surely they're using the older stuff, the surplus stuff. So that's good to know there's a use for that. You know, I'm not a tree hugger by any means, but it's always good when you can find a recyclable use for something, especially when you're talking about, in the shooting sports world. So that's pretty good.
Right. And when people see that, you know, they see my stuff, it's like a light goes off in their head. Well, I work at a fire department. I got unlimited fire hose. You know, they don't ever think about it. And it is tough to cut that stuff and to put holes in it and stuff like that, you know. But once you get it all set up, it does a great job.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize exactly how tough that stuff is. It is. I've cut off a few pieces myself to use, not for targets, but to use for a few different things, and it's not easily done. You can't just take a pair of your wife's sewing scissors and cut into it. It don't work that way.
No, you gotta have, we use a shear, but it's not easy to cut them.
Yeah, that's what I used, tin snips, actually a set of electric tin snips is what I used. To go through by it. It worked pretty well. Now, we talked about the plate racks there a little bit, but you make several different things from stand designs and all of that. So let's talk about those. What all is actually in your product line?
So starting from the most simplest, we have a shepherd's hook that holds a target. And our shepherd's hooks, we have in 36 inches and 50 inches for different heights, and you can just stab them in the dirt. Just looks like a regular shepherd's hook, except for we use cold rolled steel, so that it's not that pop metal stuff that the home goods stores sell. So it's really durable and deflects bullets really well. And so that's the simplest of targets, just a shepherd's hook in the dirt, hang a circle from it. And then if you don't have good soil, we offer shepherd hook bases, and you just put the shepherd's hook in this base, and then you can, it's got thumb screws that hold it all together, and so you can be a lot more portable with it, move it all over, set up different scenarios. And then from the shepherd hook and the bases, we also offer the 2x4 style, where you have a topper that goes on top of a 2x4 and a base to hold the 2x4, and everything's thumb screws, and our toppers are adjustable, so you can go from the top of the 2x4 to the bottom of the 2x4. So that was pretty cool.
You know, that's one thing I was noticing the other day looking at those, and it looks as off, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but could you not actually hang multiple targets on one 2x4 with that setup?
Oh yeah. Oh, sure. You could, however, you could have a 9-foot 2x4 and put, 12 targets up and down, And, a lot of people do that. They'll buy multiple toppers and add it to their system and have like a small gong at the top and a big gong at the bottom and, be real versatile with it.
Right.
Cool. And then after the 2x4 system, we do gong stands. And those, they're anywhere from a single gong to three gongs. That's our what we carry in stock. But we can make, if you want a whole 15 gongs, we can do that special order stuff. But we carry three gongs and single gong stand. And they're made from Schedule 40 inch and a quarter pipe, galvanized pipe. And everything, again, there can be broke down and bundled up and thrown in the back of a car. You can set it up when you get somewhere. And on top of the gongs, we have the plate rack. And the plate rack is, it comes with three gongs underneath it, and then the six plates resettable on top. And it comes with everything turnkey. It comes with the rope, the chains, the gongs. It's all painted nice and pretty and ready to go. And then my favorite target is the dueling tree. And you know, most people, the dueling tree is six targets, and they flip side to side, and you can either play it as a game or do the speed drills.
Right.
And you know, that's my favorite target. And then we do poppers, small, medium, and large. And then we do the pepper poppers. And we also do the jacks, what we call them, Harocker Knockers, because my last name's Harock, and you know, that was a childhood nickname, Harocker Knocker.
Right.
And it's basically, it looks like a jack, and you shoot and roll it around on the ground.
Right. Right. Now,
and go ahead.
You were talking about the dueling tree, which goes side to side, and I got to thinking, because you did mention torsos earlier. Do you do a hostage-style torso?
Yeah, we do. We call that the no-negotiation target, you know, because we don't negotiate.
Right.
But, yeah, it's a hostage-style, and we offer that in 3/8 and half-inch. And it sits on top of a supported shepherd's hook, and it's bolted at a 30-degree angle with the base, you know, to hold it up, because it's a little too heavy to just stab in the dirt. It would uproot itself when you're going to town on that bad guy.
Right. Right.
That's pretty much our, you know, we have gongs from 4 inches to 12 inches, and then all the IPSC size targets. And that's our staple target line. And then we do tons of customer custom stuff.
Okay.
Well, full size deers and bears and whatever else they want.
Right. Have you ever delved, have you ever delved in or thought about bullet traps at all? Bullet trap designs.
Yeah. And I've worked on, I had a customer, it was a gunsmith who wanted to build a bullet trap for gunsmithing, and he wanted the snail type bullet trap.
Right.
And I've recently found somebody that can roll the steel the way I need it to. I haven't built one for sale yet, but I have built a bullet trap, and I've seen the other different types of traps out. There's a lot of traps, designs and stuff, but most of the traps that I've done, it's customers have the design they want, and I'll build it for them. But I haven't manufactured to sell any yet.
Okay, I got you. We may need to get together one day, kind of show you my design.
Yeah,
it's
we can do
basically
it.
It's a big box that kind of V's toward the back, and then it has a deceleration, what I call a deceleration chamber, on the back side of it. So it's kind of neat, but. Unfortunately,
that's the problem with bullet traps, is to build something to capture all bullets, as opposed to if you're just going to be shooting handguns or whatever. You know, the price difference in those types of traps is astronomical.
You were talking about the geometry and the physics and all the other stuff earlier. It really is a game in those things when you're talking about, because you know you're dealing with that velocity, right? So I mean, you've got to decelerate that stuff first of all, before you can,
yeah,
before you can do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, with is there anything that you're currently working on? Any future designs or projects or things to add, or are you just right now you're just trying to make it through the Christmas season?
Yeah, right now it's just I'm so busy with just the people that are buying what I make now. There's always wheels turning in my head, and every time I get caught up and get time to play with those ideas, I've got a lot of different ideas that should be coming. First part of next year, we'll release a new product, but right now it's just our staple products and keeping those orders filled so that everybody can have their stuff for Christmas.
So, Russell, if you will, first of all, appreciate you spending the time to come on with us today. And if you would, kick it around, tell folks, how do they get in touch with you if they want to learn more?
Everything can be found at primotargets.com. That's PRIMEAUX, targets.com. Now, of course, I'm on all the socials and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. But all my info is on the website.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.